It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Profiler faithful, it's Matty Kiwoom. Welcome to episode 31 of The Game Plan. Please hit that like button and leave a comment and make sure you're subscribed to the Player Profiler YouTube channel. Ever been asked to take over an incredibly bad roster? Or have you ever made some bad bets and now you're stuck with a putrid team? You're going to want to stick around because today we are going to talk about resurrecting some dead dynasty rosters. So gang, get out your pen and pad and let's start game planning to save our dynasty squads. Planners, today I am joined by a colossal guest. He is a titan in the industry, so you better come correct. You can watch him on a number of shows on the Roto Underworld Network, including but not limited to The Mind of Mansion, The Decision Point, Sonic Truth, and even during the season, he hosts the Player Profilers Waiver Wire Show and Top 10 Takeaways, which, in my opinion, is the best Monday morning recap show in the fantasy industry. He is the commander of the Cliche Alert, the director of dance parties, the founder and CEO of Player Profiler. I'm talking about the Podfather himself, Matt Kelly. What is up, Matt?
Oh! I was like, who is he talking about, man? He does this show and is the Mind of Mansion and... he also does the top 10 takeaways. I think I know who he's talking about.
Yeah, we're talking about the big dog, El Capitan, baby. Thank you for joining, Matt.
Yeah, I'm glad I was able to carve out a nice little hour here with you, buddy, on a Sunday. It's cool.
Yes, sir. Very excited to talk. And like I said, we are talking about resurrecting dead dynasty rosters, whether it be your own or an orphan. But before we dive into the first segment, I'd like to surprise the guest with a couple of questions. How long have you been playing fantasy football, and how would you describe your fantasy management style?
Let's see. I started playing fantasy football in 2002, so it's been 21 years.
Oh, yeah. So you can drink. Your gaming can legally drink.
Yeah, my first pick ever was Tony Gonzalez.
Okay.
And I took him at the end of the first round. I had a whole theory about tight ends and leverage at the position and, you know, based on, you know, the what is now value over stream on the website. But that was sort of my initial thought about, you know, sort of value over replacement, that Tony Gonzalez was basically Kelsey well before Kelsey.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And then after him, it was Antonio Gates. And then after him, it was Jimmy Graham. And then after him, it was Gronk. And then it was Kelsey.
And it was Kelsey.
And now we still have Kelsey. And now we do need to figure out who's going to be Kelsey after Kelsey.
And that's a nice category, that Kelsey after Kelsey.
I don't know who that's going to be. It may be someone in the league right now. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows? It could be Chigakwankwo. We don't know. We don't know who it's going to be exactly. Right?
Could be. Maybe a little Dallas Goedert, you think?
Probably not. Goddard is already 28, so that's probably out. Yeah. It's probably going to be someone a little younger. Kyle Pitts is still in play.
Of course.
Right?
Kyle never Pitts count
still
him
in
out.
Play. Let's see. If you go to Kelsey's page on Player Profiler, you can scroll down. You can see his career stats year by year. His first year was a lost season. He had the microfracture procedure on a torn ACL. Mm-hmm. So his second year is when he first started producing, right? It was 2014 was really his first year. That was, he had 862 yards and 5 TDs. And then he had another exact same year, 875 yards with 5 TDs. And he was again, top 10 though, right? He was top 10, like tight end 8, tight end 9. Mm-hmm. And then boom, he was a top two tight end from that moment forward. So that's what you'd need. You'd need a guy that's been around the top 10 for like 3 years. The guy that actually meets that criteria, not looking so much at the efficiency, because I think his efficiency hasn't been what you'd want, but he's been in that neighborhood, and that's TJ Hockenson. So it's certainly possible, right? At 25 mm-hmm. years old, with in his last 3 years, right? He had a lost season, pretty much 2019.
Yep,
put up like over 300 yards. Then he was tight end seven, tight end seven, tight end four, and you can see the climb up to 130 targets. Now he's in an even more target-rich environment for a full season. No right. Thielen, and they haven't added anyone else in free agency in Minnesota that anyone really cares about anyway. It's just, you know, you'd like to see better yards per route run, right? He was 1.69. That was outside the top 10 yeah. yards per reception, ranked number 20th. His target premium, looking at any given target in his offense that he operated in, what was he delivering in terms of fantasy points vis-a-vis the other receivers on his team, was a negative 9.0 target premium. So the advanced stats in the efficiency side of the column, not great. Opportunity,
mm-hmm.
right? So he's very much an opportunity-driven asset. And we talked to Lord Reeves on the show. You don't want to be drafting guys specifically based on the opportunity first. You want to draft a great football player who's super efficient, and then right. if he's getting opportunity, then that's great. So the initial assessment is, if you're going to just look at fantasy points scored in a season and age, really the only Kelce we have right now as an option would be Hockenson. I don't think Freiermuth quite has enough athleticism juice to get there.
Right.
Okay, that's not going to happen. And his second year, he wasn't a top 10 tight end. So that's unlikely. So remember, Kelce's also, you know, an upper percentile athlete.
Mm-hmm.
So if we keep going down the board, Evan Ingram's too dusty.
Way too dusty at this
way
point.
Way past. Goddard's past. He's 28. Kittle's 29. So it's going to have to be either Hockenson or Pitts. Even Mark Andrews is 27. He's going to be 28 mm-hmm. early this season. And he has a hard ceiling just because of the Lamar Jackson factor. And now they're adding receivers in Baltimore. So
right.
it'd be difficult for him to be any kind of a Kelce type figure. So it could be one of these guys that are coming out, right? It could be one of
it
these.
It is a tight end class. You know, a lot of people are excited.
It's a great tight end class.
Great tight end class. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So who knows? It could be Luke Musgrave. Mm-hmm. Luke Musgrave could be the next. Luke Musgrave has a Kelce-like vibe. He's wearing a mustache. He's not taking himself too seriously. He's goofing around, yeah. but he's got size. He's got exceptional athleticism. He wasn't a big-time college producer, neither was Kelce. So there's some similarities, absolutely, mm-hmm. there.
Kelce's yeah. a little bit of a weird profile, too, because coming out, you know, he was the first pick in the third round, so his draft capital isn't super high, like either Hockenson or a Kyle Pitts. His most productive season at Cincinnati was 722 yards. He did have that missed season when he was smoking the ganja, so he has that in his profile. But what's so great about Kelce and why he's been so valuable, his first four years in the league, essentially, he was operating under Alex Smith or other quarterbacks. And then it wasn't until 2018, I believe, when Mahomes was the everyday starter. You know, we've seen him not finish. We haven't seen him finish outside the top two at the tight end position ever since. And the dude is the beacon of health. So if anyone's going to be the next Kelce, I like the Hockenson call, because do we see that similarity with a QB upgrade in year four?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of fantasy point scoring trajectory and the athletic profile, it's just we haven't seen it reflected on the field mm-hmm. in the efficiency column yet with Hockenson.
Right. Yep.
There's still hope because he's 25.
Right.
He's not a fully formed tight end. There's so much to learn. Tight ends have to learn all the blocking assignments and then mm-hmm. all the route running assignments. It's incredibly difficult. By year three and four, they're finally starting to look like themselves, and he's top five tight end
mm-hmm.
By that time. So it's possible. It's possible. But I want to see what Pitts is going to be this year. Pitts, if he takes a big leap forward, especially in those efficiency metrics,
right.
then we can start to consider Pitts to be that guy.
He has everything we want. He was a unicorn when he came out in his rookie class. That doesn't go away just because the production quite hasn't been exactly what we want in fantasy. But it's still there. I mean, he had over 1,000 yards his rookie season. The first guy since, what, Dick Butkus to do that. Dick? So
really?
Yeah, I think that was the first tight end rookie when in his rookie campaign to have had 1,000 yards since Dick Butkus. I want to say...
Dick Butkus.
Yes, am I not saying
Dick Butkus.
Or... Now I'm getting old Chicago Bears.
Dick Butkus.
No, is he the linebacker? Who's the tight end?
Dick Butkus was not a I think you're thinking of someone else.
No, who, Mike Ditka is the other
Mike
guy.
Ditka. So
that's who. Yeah, whoever the tight end was.
That Dick is Butkus the guy was a linebacker.
Yeah, so
Mike Ditka
was the right? last guy to have 1,000 yards Ditka. Receiving as a tight end.
Ditka, not Butkus. Dick Butkus. Dick Butkus.
Jeez, Louise, we ain't even 11 minutes in this thing.
Dick Butkus.
I love it.
Dick Butkus.
Dick Butkus or
Dick
Mike
Butkus.
Dick Butkus.
Dick Butkus.
Chiz the ball. That's how I'm going to remember this further. This is my Michael Scott mind association. Not Dick Butt kicks your butt as a linebacker. Mike Dick catch the ball. Mike Ditka. Boom. Now it's in there forever. I'll never forget this. Thank you, Matt.
And then there's also Raymond Berry. Raymond Berry was another great throwback tight end. So there's some good throwback tight ends you can go to, but they're so different now in terms of their abilities.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible.
So different.
But yeah, I think so. We've narrowed it down to three dudes. And yeah. Don't give me in the chat. Don't give me Dulcich and get. No, we're not talking about 240-pound move tight ends. We're not talking about guys that have a Zach Ertz ceiling.
Right.
You want to talk about the next Zach Ertz? Yeah, we can talk about Dulcich. That's great. Cool. That's a fun conversation. Mm-hmm. Kinda, not really. We're talking about an actual super fun conversation, which is the next Travis Kelce.
The big
dog. We've
right.
narrowed that down to either Hockenson or Pitts or Musgrave.
Okay. So we got the top three for the next Kelce Award. Love it. So you
not
come,
Dick Butkus.
Not unless you get IDP leagues. Maybe you're looking for the next Dick Butkus.
Dick
we ain't
Butkus.
Talking IDP here. We're not. We're talking offensive only. Mike Ditka. Yeah. So you come for the resurrecting dynasty talk, but you stay around for the confusion around Dick Butkus and Mike Ditka.
Well, there's no confusion. I just
it
like,
wasn't my. I was
I
pretty
love
confused.
The name. The name is amazing.
I was confused.
It's an amazing name.
Yeah,
it's I mean, an amazing Dick football
Butkus.
Name. Mike Ditka.
No wonder why he was so angry. He must have been angry because he must have got teased from jump. Oh,
you think?
Hi, Dick Butkus. Oh,
you think, Maddie? You think?
Look, his butt kiss just came in. Who's gonna kiss his butt? And then he beat him up because he was
even if your name was Matt Butkus.
Yo, yeah,
like
Matt. Anything like, Butkus? You're on the chopping block
with Bart calling Moe's Tavern. Right. This is what we're talking about. Now you make his first name Dick.
Yeah. Oh, my Atlanta.
Think about it.
Had it out for him. They said, you know, we want to create an angry middle linebacker. How are we going to start this? Well, we got Butkus working for us, so let's name him Richard. Everyone's going to call him Dick. Yeah. All the kids in class are going to make fun of him for Dick Butkus, and he's just going to build his anger, and then when he gets big and athletic, he's just going to waterboy everybody. Boom!
That's right. I could say if he didn't end up going into football, he would have insisted on being called Richard. That's
oh, for
sure.
If he was an insurance salesman, he ain't Dick Butkus. He's Richard.
It's Richard.
Sir Richard Esquire Butkus.
It's Richard. But you can tell if he's just like going to be a sports guy, he's just like, man, fuck it.
Let's go. Dick. They're not going to make fun of me if I can hit him in the
teeth.
What
are you going
to do? Back then, too, you
what are you going to do? You're going to make fun of me? What are you going to do?
Dick killed a guy.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Dick.
It's
Butkus, actually.
Yeah, I'm going to kick your butt.
Yeah.
And we're going to go right into resurrecting a dynasty roster. But first, let's hear about the breakout fight.
Oh, hey, it's Mr. Breakout Finder coming at you. The Breakout Finder features three key tools. A database of metrics that includes speed score, college dominator, breakout age, but also Breakout Finder only stats like dynamic score, level of competition, teammate score. All of these things are part of the overall Breakout Finder algorithm that pinpoints the probability that a player will break out. Everyone's talking about my model does this and my model does that. Well, we give you the data points that go into the model. We have a feature that lets you compare players. And then we give you the precise probability of every wide receiver, every running back sorted and filterable by class year. So when I'm talking to my friends and I need to show them why I'm so bullish on Player X, I pull out the Breakout Finder and bam, there he is. So go to the App Store, go to Google Play. It's $5 to get the Breakout Finder, and then a couple extra bucks to get some of these additional enhanced stats. Go download it and thank me later.
So my first question for you, Mr. Kelly. So when you're trying to resurrect a dead dynasty roster, when should fantasy managers decide whether to go for it versus rebuilding? Is that something they should keep in fluidity throughout their offseason, or is there a time to make a decision?
That's a pretty good ad, though, that Breakout Finder ad.
We have this super handsome guy that goes and drops these things. I don't know if you've met him, but I think he's going to be at the Draft House in Kansas City. I'd love for you guys to meet up because
his name's Dick Butkus.
His name.
Oliver Klozoff.
Mike Hunt.
So this is funny. So we're planning like which of these reads to run on these shows. And Cody was having Nate Liss on the Future Cast.
Yep, that was a good show. Good episode.
So I was like, well, I think I start that Breakout Finder read by saying, hey, it's Mr. Breakout Finder. You should run that read on the Future Cast so Nate can see it.
Yep.
Right, because Nate invented the Breakout Finder. Everybody knows this, right? Nate invented the Breakout Finder, eventually got tired of it, gave it to us and said, do with it what you want. I'm too busy to deal with this thing. And we were like, sure, we'll take the Breakout Finder. It's cool. We'll manage it.
We'll maintain it.
Yeah. We love it. And so is what we're doing. And it's going great. And so I just loved that little, that little turning of the knife, on Nate. It's an ongoing bit. The me of the turning of the knife, me embittered about Nate leaving the Sonic Truth. We'll keep that bit going. And then even when I'm in absentia, I'm not even on the show. I'm turning. I thought that was so great. I was like, this is going to be subtle. This is going to be a subtle little.
I was watching that episode too. And you could tell, you could see the smile go across his face.
Oh, like, you did.
He got me. We got him.
We got him, everybody.
Yeah.
Gotcha. You were saying about some dynasty thing.
Oh yeah. Well, my first question, as we are supposed to talk about resurrecting dynasty rosters, but I can honestly talk about anything.
We're supposed to discuss.
We can do whatever we want. This is what the most fun thing is. It's just talking shit.
The whole real reason for this whole channel existing and this podcast is me doing whatever I want.
That's fair, and that's fun.
Really, it is. That's really what it is. So we're going to continue with your resurrection.
Well, we were actually the resurrection. So just a quick answer on when guys or fantasy managers should decide whether it's time to go for it or kind of go float and rebuild.
You got to assess the other rosters in your league.
Certainly.
You know, that's what you got to do. You also have to be in that mindset, right? That it's time.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to go into a startup circling the year on the calendar. Okay, this is the year I'm going to be competitive. And you can't wait more than 2 years at the most. Mm-hmm. I only wait 1 year if I'm going to rebuild or productive struggle. It's like a 1 year deal, right? It's like a 1 year. I'm going to try to get some picks for the next rookie draft. I'm going to maybe slightly lean youth. I'm going to make some trades that ensure that I'm not going to be competitive this year, but I'm going to be competitive next year. That's really if you think you're going to execute a 2 to 3 year rebuild, that is such a difficult task. It's such an uphill battle. And then what ends up happening ultimately is the league disbands just as your team is finally turned around.
Yep.
So it is so risky. It is hugely risky. It's like buying a stock in a company as a long-term investment when you're not sure if the exchange is even going to be around in 5 years. Like, imagine if you bought stock in an Apple, but you weren't sure in 5 years whether there's going to be a New York Stock Exchange where all you have is a piece of paper, right? Because that is what happens with a lot of these dynasty teams. So you'll end up seeing these guys, they know this. So they'll go hard at winning in year one and year two, and then they know they're going to be leaving.
Mm-hmm.
They're in it just for 1 or 2 years and then they're out. Those people need to be found and put on a list somewhere.
Right? A banned list. Yep. Yep.
A banned list. I'm just saying, like, they need to be like a high risk list. There needs to be a list, and there needs to be reputational damage to these people that's done. Because it used to be when we were living in communities of 100 people, everyone would know everybody, and you couldn't get away with fraud because you get a reputation very quickly, and then no one would trade with you, and you would starve to death.
Right.
That's what used to happen in human subsistence societies up until just a few hundred years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But now we're all connected by the internet, and there's a guy in New Zealand playing against you. You have no idea what his ethics are, if he has any at all. So there needs to be a list of the high frequency abandoners.
I like that. High frequency abandoners.
Right. And then, so if you're going to invite those people into your league, you know what you're getting into. Those people are going to be in a startup. You know what you're getting into. Right.
Like HFA
maybe
list.
Say, hey, you're on this list. You got to buy in for 5 years, motherfucker.
You're in and you ain't going.
You're not even going to deal with your chicanery, because you have people that are trying to execute a productive struggle in good faith against people that are not operating in good faith. They know damn well they're going to be leaving in a year or two.
Right.
And I just
squeezing
want to say
everything out of that year.
It's important to say, just as just for the information for the audience, that I have almost never abandoned a dynasty league. It's like a dynasty credit score. Thank you, Boofy. Thank you, Boofy. This is what we're talking about. There needs to be a dynasty credit score, and I'm going to dynastycreditscore.com. Someone go do that. Like Nate did with Breakout Finder and then abandon it. Yeah.
And we just,
so Nate's abandoned an app, and he also just, again, I have to say this, for full transparency for the episode and the audience, I was in one league that was Devi that was run by Ryan McDowell. You can ask Ryan McDowell. I politely asked Ryan McDowell if I could exit the league because it was over my head.
Yeah.
I said, I can't do this. I'm in this draft and I don't know these guys. And I just feel like this is bad.
Right. It's just like, kind of a waste.
This is me, like, If anyone sees this draft, I'm probably going to be embarrassed because I don't know anything, right? I don't follow these guys closely enough.
That doesn't put you on the HFA
list. They're sophomores.
The high frequency bender list. No.
So I said, can you find someone to take this team over? I apologize. So I apologize profusely. You can ask Ryan McDowell about this situation. That's the first and last dynasty team I abandoned. And then I was invited to be in the I'm Outrage League, which was a Nateless branded league where you could play against Nate Liss.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. And then I traded my first rounder, executed, the productive struggle, which I like to do. I now have a super team. I have the 101. I have another first rounder. It's start two tight ends, and I have Hockenson and Andrews. It's one of those kinds of teams. It's just one of those times. The running backs just need to fall into place, and then it's completely and utterly on, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I did the things you need to do. I went and acquired Rodgers, things to win now.
Right.
Like I built the nucleus, CeeDee Lamb, these kinds of players, young players, Devontae Smith, and then going to bring in an Aaron Rodgers, bring in a couple.
A little cherry on top.
Yeah, a little, for Superflex, Aaron Rodgers is still really valuable.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you could still get him without necessarily giving up much at quarterback.
Yeah, right? You don't have to sell the farm to get Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, you can get Aaron Rodgers in Superflex without giving up too much. So I had everything just dialed, and then I looked up and I just happened to be looking at the league, the teams in the league, and I was like, well, where's the outraged guy? Why is no one outraged? What happened to the outraged guy? And like, oh no, he left. He did a win now. Drafted a bunch of aging veterans, and now Dalvin Cook and Leonard Fournette and these guys are in limbo, and he's out. I was like, okay, well, I was like, but I know Cody's in the league with me, right? Cody also joined with me. Cody just happened to be the one who sent me the 101 the year before. He didn't know it was going to be the 101, but I looked at his roster. I'm like, this might be the 101. And I was like, where's Carpentier? And they're like, oh, no, Cody left. Cody left, too. He said he's in too many leagues. I was like, oh, I'm in too many leagues. Excuse.
Oh, no.
So all my buddies are gone. Oh, my God. It's just me. So that's it. I really Cody's team was quite bad. And I understand why he was demoralized, and this was one of the leagues that he would, edit. I could see that, right? If you're curating your leagues, if I were Cody, this would have been my first team to cut.
Yeah.
And he legitimately is in too many leagues. So that I understood, right? Okay. That I was like, cool.
So he's not on the list. Cody's
Cody. I'm in other leagues with Cody, and he would never leave those leagues. So I totally understand.
Okay,
I also know that he left after Nate left. So Cody abandoning that team is like a 2 out of 10 in terms of egregious.
That's not, is that list worthy? What's the number of 10?
But Nate leaving. Nate was the first to act. Nate's name is on the league. Nate had previously won it, right? And don't forget, this was also the league where the final was Nate against someone who was dying of cancer.
Wow.
So then Nate beat the guy that was dying of cancer. And it was an amazing story because he was hospitalized and his health was declining. He could no longer keep up with his dynasty teams. And even though the roster was locked and Nate was moving his lineup around every week, this guy remained competitive to the very end. And then Nate outstart-sitted him at the very end.
Made those last minute adjustments.
As he was dying, Nate outstart-sitted him. And then we actually gave $1,000 to his charity of choice.
Oh, great.
I think it was a mission against pancreatic cancer. I believe it was a national pancreatic cancer fund. And it was an incredible story watching it unfold. Nate ultimately did win.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, within a little over a year, Nate had abandoned that league.
Yeah. He Bernie Madoffed you guys. He brought you in, won it, took everything and ran. He Bernie Madoffed you. Is that might be.
I don't know. I wouldn't call it necessarily a Ponzi scheme that he's running, though it is weird. His name is on the league and he's not in it.
Yeah.
So maybe he's going to make a trying to seed the leagues. Maybe he's trying to create an empire of leagues. He could be doing this.
Maybe.
Where a couple, he's like, you can play with me for a couple of years and then I'm going to kind of exit stage left. I'm going to kind of slide out the back door.
The Nate list tree of leagues. He's building it.
And then the next thing you know, he's got like 70 I'm outrage leagues and he's only in like 5 of them. Maybe that's the move. Maybe he's secretly building an army of leagues, right?
And he just pops into the leagues he can win. So
he pops just, like, in just to get him going, just to start the lawnmower.
I think I'm on Nate's side.
Right?
I like
and
this
he wins,
move.
He wins. He don't forget he's winning because he's going all Dalvin Cooks and Leonard Fournette's. And then he's out, right?
This is next
so
level.
He wins for a couple of years and then he gets to run these leagues in absentia with his name on them. This is quite the scheme that he's got.
I like it. Maybe I should have him on the game.
Right.
And
of course, Cody and I
were
pulled into it. We're pulled into the scheme. It's crazy.
That's a good move. But through all this here, what I gathered is it's important to kind of define your winning window. And you talked about a winning window or your team's window when we were preparing for the show. So like what kind of indicators are you looking for when you're evaluating your roster, when you're defining your team's window to win now?
Because you have the window set.
His window's set.
And then sometimes you got to push it, right? So don't be afraid to say, hey, it didn't work out. I believe in that league, I had Javonte Williams, which I was banking on. I think we could all safely say in 2023, Javonte Williams is going to be teed up to be a workhorse. No Melvin Gordon in Denver. Russell Wilson's second year. Quality offensive line. If you're going to have Javonte Williams as your RB1 centerpiece for a productive struggle roster, that's as close to an ideal setup as you could possibly get. He tears his ACL. Things happen, right? So I could have pivoted last year and I decided to go for it because it was running back. And I said, I could maybe backfill this with some players. I can stream some players. I can get some running backs. If it was a CeeDee Lamb or a keep or even a Hockenson, I probably would have had to try to pivot and try to not make the playoffs, do whatever I could to not make the playoffs without tanking,
Mavericks,
of course,
if you will.
Without tanking. I would never manipulate my lineup to try to lose. I've been in leagues every year, every single year. I'm in leagues where people are manipulating their lineups to try to lose, which is shameful. I would never do that. I always play to win, but when it comes down to it, right? If there's an offer where, yeah, it's going to degrade my team, but I'm going to get picks in particular, then I'm going to do it.
Right.
Like it's fascinating to go back and look at, say, Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley has been devastating for Dynasty in ways that many people don't fully appreciate, in that if you had the 101 and you were a rebuilding team and you felt like that this was a key part of your rebuild was to get this young running back as your cornerstone with the 101, there were a lot of rebuilding rosters that thought this is it. This right. is it. Yeah, I'm a year away, but I'm going to get Barkley, and then I'm going to have Barkley in his second year. The Giants are turning it around under Gettleman, and it's going to be on.
The Gettleman, the big binder man.
And guess what happened? If you use the 101 on Barkley, you destroyed your chances of rebuilding on schedule. Because what ended up happening was he exceeded expectations. He had an incredible rookie year.
Yep, RB3 that year.
Right, over 100 targets as a rookie 91 running receptions. Back, yep. Which is hard to do, right? I mean, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's one of the more obvious statements I've ever said. 100 targets as a rookie running back is pretty hard to do.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
You think? So he had 91 catches that year.
Yeah.
I mean, bonkers, 24 fantasy points a game.
Right.
He hasn't hit 19 fantasy points a game since. So what happened was you actually got a worse draft pick that year. Heading into 2019, you got a worse draft pick because Barkley was so good.
Mm-hmm.
And then Barkley, you know, underperformed from that point forward, and you didn't have the high draft pick you would have had in 2019. So it crippled you.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing you should have been doing is going Barkley. This is why Bijan Robinson is not a rebuilding pick. Bijan Robinson is a win now pick. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you're rebuilding, 9 times out of 10, you're trading back. You're trying to get more picks. If you don't feel like your window starts this year, drafting Bijan, because that age 21 first season for a player getting drafted in the first round is typically a very productive season.
Right.
So unless you think you can win this year, you should be trying to get out of the 101. You shouldn't be viewing like, oh, it's a young running back for my young roster. It's part of my rebuild plan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the cautionary tale of Barkley says, don't do that. Do not do that. So you got to go through your league, figure out what teams are the most competitive. And hopefully there's not a team out there that's too much of a super team. And then we're going to be rolling out the injury finder soon, which gives the probabilities of guys missing multiple games. And you need to look at some of the injury risks. Sometimes a team will look like a super team, but then you actually think about it like, wait, they've got McCaffrey and Debo and a bunch of guys we know are probably going to miss games this year. Dalvin Cook and a bunch of guys. So it's like, okay, yeah, it's a super team, but if one of these guys tears an ACL and the other one like has a hip flexor thing that misses 5 games,
right. Yep.
Then actually this team's a little more fragile than I thought.
Yeah, super right, so teams need depth for that reason.
You got to be a realist about some of these teams in your league and whether or not if things break wrong for them, that you could then step into the breach and win. Like what? And then is there two of those teams? Mm-hmm. Well, if there's just two teams, then you're probably in great shape. The problem becomes when it's been so consolidated and there's four teams. If there's four teams where you add up the lifetime values of these four teams next to your own, just put them in a spreadsheet. You can go to the dynasty rankings on Player Profiler and you can download the dynasty rankings and the lifetime values. And you can go ahead and assign lifetime values to all five teams, the four teams you think are the most competitive and your teams. And you see where the differences are. And we're going to be rolling out a feature, if not this year, next year, in our Dynasty Deluxe package, which would allow you to load the teams in your league and see all the lifetime values across the board, right, and compare your team to your league. And that will help you not only see where teams are weak for trade purposes, but also evaluate your team next to the other teams, juxtapose them, and decide whether this year or next year is the year to go for it. If not this year, then you got to go for it next year.
Right.
Okay? But you got to make the decision now. If there's about four teams that you think are a order of magnitude better than your team, then I would continue to rebuild. But if there's three or less, your team could exceed expectations, and two of those three teams could experience injuries or just underperform because it's the NFL. So exactly. I wouldn't take that for granted. That's why in this I'm outraged league, I did go for it even after Javonte went down, because I wanted to take my chances, and I almost did it. I almost made it through and won the whole thing. It was close. If things broke my way a little bit, I could have made it. So, especially if you think there's two, even if they're really good teams, two teams in a league can experience some key injuries. Think about the injuries that have happened to players. Now, last year there wasn't the volume of devastating injuries that we've had in previous years. If you remember, it actually wasn't that bad. Think about it. Diggs played, Jefferson played a full season, Chase missed a few games, Hill played the whole year. A lot of these guys played the whole year. Barkley played the whole year.
Yep.
McCaffrey against all odds.
All odds. Yep. I mean, he broke that trend. No, we had never seen anything like that.
Chubb. I mean, go down the list. There was a bunch of key players that played either all the games or almost every game. ETN, all these players thought were super fragile coming in. They played like 17 games.
Right.
So that's less likely. I'm afraid that we were perhaps lulled into a false sense of stability last year with the lack of devastating frontline injuries. Because the year before, remember, we lost Cam Akers in mini camp. We lost Dobbins. We lost ETN in training camp or in preseason. And it was bad, right? We would lose players in week one, week two for the season, these early ACL tears. We didn't have that last year. Remember, that could still happen this year to any one of the key players in some of these teams. So even if there's a significant distance between you and the top two teams, I would still go for it. I would still go, knowing that that's an important point, to not get so discouraged when you see there are two teams in your league that are clearly better. That's right now. That's when we're projecting. But when the season starts and the bullets start flying, we'll see.
Chaos always ensues. Every season, some sort of chaos ensues.
There will be more chaos this season. I can promise you that. You want to write something down? Chaos regression. Write down a prediction? This year will be more chaotic than last year.
We are calling for a chaos regression. I couldn't agree more. And I also think you're touching on a few points here that are very valuable for the listeners to take on. Is defining this window now makes sense, because then you don't pork yourself in your rookie draft, where if you're looking for 2 years out, Bijan's not that guy. We just highlighted why in the whole Saquon Barkley. You need to win now to get a guy like a Bijan Robinson in your winning
window. Yeah, I'm so excited, right? If I'm a win-now team and I traded for the 101, I've been sitting on this pick for years, I'm pushing the button.
Oh, it's going.
I can't wait to draft him. I'm so excited. In fact, in the league that I talked about where Nate abandoned it and then Cody followed on.
This guy. Oh, my Lanta. Oh, my Jesus.
I just can't. It's like, why did you get into fantasy football? I don't know, to talk sports and talk shit.
Well, talking shit's the most fun.
You know, I mean, that's what we're doing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's the best. And if you could do it on a podcast, oh, my God. Amazing. Amazing. I lost my train of thought.
I'll help us get right back on.
I have no idea what I was going to say.
Let's just get back on the rails.
Beyond no idea. So, I went out in this league and I said, I have the 101 and it is super flex, and it's a deep super flex league. You know, Stroud is absolutely in play for me.
With that 101, yep.
Yeah, with the 101. Oh, yeah. It's not a lock. It depends on and I was like, especially given my quarterbacks, it was like Mac Jones, Justin Fields, there's big time fragility with those types of Garoppolo. I mean, it's not a strong quarterback group. And I was like, I probably should just go Stroud here. And I was like, but I can't. Structurally, this whole team has been built around me getting an early running back to finish off the roster build. There's no way around it. I have to go running back. So I said, I got to figure out a way to get a veteran quarterback. I got to bring in a guy like Rodgers. So I got Rodgers to give me the ability to draft Bijan. If I right. didn't it gives you have the confidence Rodgers,
that you can go that route.
If I didn't have Rodgers, going Bijan would be inexcusable, mm-hmm. given how weak I was at quarterback. You're setting yourself up, you know, for a super fragile quarterback roster. And essentially what happens in that is you're going for it this year. If it doesn't work out and the Patriots turn to Zappy, you know, Justin Fields continues to take a record number of sacks struggles, even mm-hmm. though they've upgraded the wide receiver position. I don't think he will. I think he is going to be unlocked as a passer this year.
Yeah.
I think he will grow and develop. He's never going to be super aware in the pocket, but at least maybe improve that enough where mm-hmm. it's going to be a quarterback they can feel comfortable building around. Almost like that's the similarity with Justin Fields and Daniel Jones. Like if you think that Chicago is going to move on from Fields, Fields is an order of magnitude better than Daniel Jones.
Absolutely.
Yep. And the Giants were like, yeah, Daniel Jones has all these flaws that Justin Fields has with pocket awareness and sacks and all these problems,
mm-hmm.
but he's less than Fields across the board.
Doesn't
have the same arm, doesn't have the same legs. Like he's just a weaker version of Fields across the board. And they were like, we're committing to him. We're committed.
Right.
We're in on Jones. So the idea mm-hmm. that the Bears wouldn't be in on Fields maybe is a stretch.
For sure. They just had the
There's
1-on-1
no fragility there.
Yeah.
It's not like he's a Trevor Lawrence level young quarterback. He's not. So to be a realist, though I feel this way about Fields, if you look at a roster and you see Mac Jones and Fields and Garoppolo, you can't look yourself in the mirror and be realistic and say, yeah, I'm going to YOLO and just go running back here and I'll figure it out. I'll stream a quarterback. Yeah. Even though it's a super flex, super competitive, deep dynasty league. Yeah. I'll stream a quarterback. I'll get it figured out. Like you see this Pollyanna thinking all the time where really what you should be doing, if you can't trade that pick, is quarterback. It feels like you're not getting the shiniest possible toy in the toy bin, but you're doing what's in the best interest of your fantasy team in the long run. And that's probably what you should be doing unless you think you're ready to, if you think that if you're cool with abandoning a league, right? If you're on that list
later,
right? Yep. If you have a bad dynasty credit score,
yep.
And you're like, hell with it. I don't care. I already have a bad dynasty credit score. I'm on the list.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go Bijan, and if these fragile quarterbacks fall apart, I'm out of the league.
I can just bounce. We don't. If you're on the list, that's the move to make.
You know, I built this team to win it this year. If it doesn't happen this year, I'm out. That's your disposition, then go Bijan. Fine. I am not ever thinking in that way. Mm-hmm. I'm always thinking about the next 5 years. I'm going to be in this league for the long run. So, yes, would getting Bijan help me be more competitive this year? Sure. Is it in the best interest of this team in the long run? No.
I don't know if you've used this term before.
It's a nuanced conversation.
We're gonna coin it here in the game plan. A fortification trade. The Aaron Rodgers was a fortification trade where you were able to lock in this roster and give you that flexibility at the 1-on-1. So if you're sitting there, like you said, it would have been fantasy malpractice to just blindly go Bijan without that third quarterback to kind of feel confident that you could turn to if need be.
That's right.
I like that.
By the way, I also have one of my running backs in that league because they use like, oh, how could you be competitive with Javonte? Well, one of my running backs is actually Alexander Mattison, and I have Alexander Mattison on the block, right?
You're getting rid of him.
Of course.
Of course.
Of course. I mean, it's like, oh, I have so much respect for Rich Rebar, right? Oh, he's the best, right? He wins very competitive dynasty leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And he's telling you that to let opportunity wag the dog is a tremendous mistake, especially in dynasty. And this isn't even a surefire opportunity. This is maybe an opportunity if there's an opportunity that there's an opportunity, right?
Yes.
It's like
I know what you're saying.
If Dalvin Cook exits and they don't draft Bijan in the first round, or they draft Roshan on day two,
right?
Like, if. And then Alexander Mattison is a workhorse in a potentially top five scoring offense in the league. Well, also if he definitively takes the lion's share of the touches away from Ty Chandler, who's going into his second year and is essentially what would be a Tevin Coleman to Devontae Freeman like split, where he's going to get still 40% of the opportunities to Madison's 60%. If all of this works out, Madison still will not be a full workhorse because he hasn't shown that level of efficiency. All he's done is get you the bare minimum with a huge workload one game a year where the chalk in DFS. He's the chalk in DFS one game a year. And he's going to give you the 25 fantasy points because he's going to get six dump off passes, score two touchdowns on 90 rushing yards and 3.8 yards per carry. That is not a guy that you would then trade for, you know, an asset who actually is electric, who is one of the best in the league in terms of yards created per touch and all these advanced efficiency metrics we have on playerprofiler.com. That is doing it wrong. And so if you see in the trade finder on Player Profiler in the Dynasty Deluxe, we have the trade finder where you can look up trades. And if you see that Alexander Mattison is being traded straight up for DeAndre Swift, something absurd, then you should be putting him on the block immediately.
Right. Use that market indicator of what you could go out and make people up a trade for sure. I love the trade finder. You know, I think it's a great tool, but yeah, that's a good point. You see something out there where someone's getting kooky. Maybe one of your league mates doesn't get that crazy, but hey, if you can get 85% of that type of move, this is your exit ramp off an Alexander Mattinson, a guy who, like you said, you have to make sure if you're not playing best ball, you're playing in a lineup league. You got to make sure he is in that lineup that week, that chalk week that you talked about. And if you're good that week, you don't need his coverage, then you don't got a guy. You don't really have an asset there. So I like the idea of moving a guy at his peak value, especially now with news swirling that Dalvin's not going to be on the Vikings this year.
Alexander Mattinson's cap hit in 2023 is $2.4 million. $2.4 million. I mean, he signed for something like $6.3 million guaranteed for 2 years.
For 2 years, yep.
That is the going rate for a running back in his prime going into his second contract that hasn't done a goddamn thing.
Yep.
That basically has institutional knowledge with the Vikings. So he's worth more to the Vikings than he is anywhere else because he knows the system, right? And he's been good, not great. He's been a worthy cardboard cutout of Dalvin Cook whenever they've needed him.
Yep.
That's worth something discount like $3 million a year.
For sure. Yeah.
And
for
that's
them.
Exactly what he got. He put his toe into the marketplace, got nothing more than that, and just signed back with Minnesota. And you're gonna delude yourself and thinking that, oh, this guy's teed up to be a workhorse. They're not gonna draft anybody that's gonna threaten him. Ty Chandler can't threaten him. And Dalvin Cook's definitely gone because I heard rumors that he was gone. So let's go ahead and just get it all over with and run his price right up to DeAndre Swift.
Ooh, that's idiots. A great trade. Yeah, great trade. I would absolutely take that Dalvin. DeAndre Swift trade. Wait, so we're talking about
this guy has jumped the shark, man.
Oh yeah, big time. I want to get in that league, but then I'll probably stack my team and then leave it right away and then get on the HFA list, which so I'm not going to do that. I'm just not going to do that. But we need it for any Alexander Mattinson believer. They need to make sure that they dodge all the running back bullets in this year's draft. And there are a lot of them. But if you're a fantasy team builder, right, and you're looking at a shitty roster or you're taking on a shitty roster, you know, what are some ways that you can judge whether a rookie class is kind of good or not? Because we need to know now, right? We've established the window. We've established when we're going to open the window, when we're going to push the pace. So now we need to know, is a rookie class good or not? And what should people do to kind of figure that out? How can they get judge that?
Oh, I don't know. Do we have a rookie guide?
A rookie guide. That would be pretty nifty if we had something.
I'm looking at Travis Kelce, and then there's a little call to action right there at the top. Get our rookie guide. Boom. It's $10. It's not the most expensive guide, but it is the best.
It's the best.
Yeah. So that's all you need to know. And it's also, we should mention, free to anyone with Dynasty Deluxe.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get the rookie guide in our NFL draft section for $10, or you can go to Dynasty Deluxe and there's another tab there where it's there for free. So if you have our Dynasty package, you get the rookie guide by default.
Yep.
So you're welcome.
Get on that. That's how you can judge whether rookie class is good or not. Cody and others putting in the work to make sure you know what you got. And the rookie guide's there for $10 if you're not a member of the all-in package. But if you want to use a promo code Maddie, get yourself a little discount on that promo code package, which will include a free draft guide. So yes, plain and simple, you want to know whether a rookie class is good or not, turn to those who can give you the guidance, and our rookie guide can certainly do that. We talked Superplex, you know, kind of where we should go. You gave a personal example, which I think is great. We learned a new term, which is how you fortify your team with a trade so that it gives you flexibility in other avenues. But so in Superflex, quarterbacks are gold. We all know that. Dead rosters typically have subpar to downright shitty quarterbacks. So in your opinion, what are some ways to save these Superflex rosters with bad quarterbacks? And when should managers really focus on drafting the signal callers? Every single year, or is there a specific year?
Well, stay away from Malik Willis. How about that?
Yeah.
Woof. So, those quarterbacks from last year's class are traps. Now we hear Sam Howell's going to be the starter in Washington. They're going to commit to him. Oh, man. If you have Sam Howell, you immediately need to try to package Sam Howell to move up and get a better quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the best quarterback for Superflex for the last 5 years, the guy that I have the most exposure to, he's the guy in any money league, especially a big money league where I'm not just, you know, doing it for fun,
mm-hmm.
or doing it to kind of spread it around. I'm in so many patron leagues. I can't have the same quarterbacks in every patron league, but I mean, Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins, right? If I want the best value elite quarterback,
mm-hmm.
guy with 500 rushing yards and five plus rushing touchdowns in his range of outcomes, as well as being one of the most prolific passers in the league, that's Dak Prescott. If I want just to lock in 18 fantasy points a game at quarterback in a super flex league, which is incredibly valuable, then I want Kirk Cousins.
Okay.
So Prescott and Cousins are the guys that are most exposed to. And if you can find a way to package whoever it is, from Kenny Pickett to Ritter to Howell,
mm-hmm.
anything you can do to get up to that at least Kirk Cousins zone, then I would do that. You picked up Geno Smith last year. Anybody that's gonna be a starter, you want to try to soak those guys up and then see if you can flip them. If you can't flip them, fine. Like, you should be trying to flip Jordan Love. If you have Jordan Love, like some of these rosters that have been hollowed out, they still have these zombie quarterbacks. They have a Tannehill. They have a Love. They have a Gardner Minshew, right? Guys like that.
Yep.
So I'm always trying to trade up, even like a Derek Carr, right? Derek Carr has the contract, but I don't have Derek Carr in that same class as I have a guy like Kirk Cousins. I think they're totally different.
They're always linked. They're always put alongside each other. So I'm glad you're bringing this up.
Yeah. They're Carr's in a completely different tier from Cousins below,
mm-hmm.
right? Goff is good for 1 year, right? So I would try to see if you can flip these guys, all these guys. If you go to our dynasty rankings, pretty much all the veterans from Tua on down, I would be trying to flip, because Tua, he lacks the pocket awareness. He lacks the rushing upside. He is basically riding the two best wide receivers that any team could possibly have, right? What do you think's better? Is Waddle Hill better, or would you rather have Higgins Chase? Those are the two best wide receiver duos in the league,
yeah,
right?
Easy, in my opinion. Yeah, I agree with that for sure.
Right. So it's one of those two. And so I don't love like the concussion risk. I don't love that he takes huge hits.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love that he struggled so much early. And he makes so many catastrophic throws. There's just the danger plays for Tua. I don't think that he's a long-term dynasty asset. I still think of him more of a short-term guy. Mm-hmm. That's why people are like, how can you have Tua and Geno Smith at a similar ranking? And I'm like, well, one guy has Lockett and DK Metcalf for the next year or two. One guy has Hill and Waddle for the next year or two.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, they put up the exact same fantasy points per game last year.
Yep.
What am I missing? What are you talking about?
It's just people getting ageist.
Tua's going to play. Oh, you think Tua's going to play 10 years? Really? Okay. At that level? Sure. Yeah. Right. Tell me another one. Okay. No, No way, man. So I would try to be trading up for Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins, Dak Prescott. I've seen trades for Deshaun Watson still, but those are pretty much, there was a bunch of trades for Deshaun Watson. Those are, that's just leveled off. I think most people have started to come to terms with the fact that he's going to be back. He's going to look more like Deshaun Watson this year. You're not going to be able to get much value on him. That's sort of a waste of time to try to lowball offer for Deshaun Watson. That's not going to happen. CJ Stroud would be the guy I would draft. So okay. I had an early pick and I knew that Bijan would go 101 and I thought that maybe my league mates would be going somewhere else. Jackson Smith and Jigba or Bryce Young or Anthony Richardson. Yep. I would try to trade down a couple picks. If I were the 101, I would trade out of there and try to trade at the 104 and hope to get Stroud at the 104. If you don't get Stroud, then you can get Richardson. Right. And chase that rainbow. I'm also fine doing that. And then if I can't get those guys, we've seen the betting markets really shift. I think now it's probably Bryce Young going to Carolina.
Seems if that way. Yeah.
Bryce Young is the 101. Superflex drafters are not going to let him get out of the first three picks. And that necessarily means that one of Richardson or Stroud will make it to the 104. And then it's a coin flip whether or not the person at the 104 takes Smith and Jigba. There's also the possibility if Will Levis goes to Indianapolis that he gets hyped up
for sure.
And that either Richardson or Stroud makes it to the 105, 106. So that's an interesting place to try to settle in 104, 105 and knowing you can probably get Richardson or Stroud. It'd be really bad luck. It'd be really bad luck if you ended up with the 104 and you didn't have your choice of Richardson or Stroud. That would be real snake bitten. So I would try to just start, make a commitment, right? If you're trying to rebuild a team and you're a realist, if I'm in a startup, like I said, I'm not committing to a rebuild for more than a year.
Right.
I know next year in 2024, I'm going to try to be competitive, or at least I'm going to give myself a shot. And if I get like a major ACL tear or I have bad injury luck, I'll pivot.
Yep.
I'm always going to leave myself open to pivoting and extending the rebuild a year, but I'm going into the season in week one with a competitive mindset,
looking to push the pace.
Exactly. Yep. And that whole summer, I'm trying to make some moves to add veterans, especially maybe a second contract wide receiver. That would be the move.
Yep.
If I'm in my second year of a productive struggle from a startup, it's a different story. If you're taking over one of these hollowed out orphans,
yes,
you got to give yourself 3 years.
Right, because you have to have at least a year plus to tear all the value soup, all of it, get as much in hand as you can.
Yeah, to start. And you got to get as many picks as possible. Mm-hmm. You got to shed as much as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. Load up on picks, load up on young players, and ideally you get the 101 or the 102 next year, and then you can pencil in one of the top two quarterbacks in next year's draft. We're probably going to be better than the quarterbacks in this draft.
Yeah.
Depending on how Anthony Richardson develops, Anthony Richardson could be the QB1 in fantasy in 2 years. He has
that ability with his super athleticism.
We'll see, right? We'll see what happens. So I would pencil in that. And then I'd also take a shot on a quarterback this year as well. Stroud has hidden upside. So the beauty of taking Stroud at the 104, if you can get into the 104, get Stroud. He has a really high floor and also a really high ceiling, which is the perfect thing you want. That's the sort of Dak Prescott profile that you want for super flex.
Yep.
And so that would be my starting point. How can I get to that point where I have, then if you look at the calendar, 2024, you draft another young quarterback, then that in that quarterback second year, you can be competitive. So you're trying to win and say, I could conceivably start winning in 2025. Every older running back, even running backs that aren't necessarily even that much older, but even if they're like on the last year of their rookie deal, you should be trying to get out. You should be trying to get out of Kenneth Walker. You should be trying to get out of everybody.
Right. Those guys aren't taking you out of dynasty obscurity.
You should have no running backs.
Right.
Like you should have no running. I mean, nothing. Even Kenneth Walker. I mean, God, it sounds crazy, but even Breece Hall, like, if you don't think you're going to be competitive until 2025, those guys are going to be heading into their next contract by then. And we don't know what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, they'd have to be an outlier of health to then survive in that next step.
Yeah, and then I wouldn't even draft any running backs in this class either. I would circle Hendon Hooker in the second round.
Okay.
I would try to get early second round pick on Hendon Hooker. Hendon Hooker is like the number one guy to target if you're in a rebuild mode, because he was super efficient, right? He had multiple 600-yard rushing games. Yes.
Seasons. Rushing seasons, not 600-yard rushing games. Got to make that distinction.
Excellent correction. Thank you for that correction. Yes, he was a system quarterback.
Yeah.
But I don't hear anyone like diminishing Jalin Hyatt for that system as much, right? So, okay. Then Patrick Mahomes was a system quarterback. Deshaun Watson was a system quarterback. That was the reason why Trubisky went 8 picks in front of those guys.
Right.
Because
right.
he played in a pro style offense at UNC. They played in a pop gun.
Big 12 offense.
Yeah, exactly. So they're like, oh, well, this is the pistol spread and it just doesn't count.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, oh, well, actually, these guys are just awesome.
They can chuck it 100,000 yards. Like they can get it done.
And yes, there's going to be a Mariota that comes along that checks all the boxes and but isn't just properly wired to, you know, be anything more than a pure game manager in the NFL. And so that's certainly possible. But yeah, Hendon Hooker looks like Mariota. But the problem is, when Mariota was drafted, you had to use the 102 in Superflex to get him.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Right now, you can use the 202 to get basically a Mariota type profile. And if he's not the super careful game manager, if he is a little more daring than Mariota, then you probably have a winning player on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not going to hurt you this year. He's not going to play much this year coming off the injury. And as a second round pick, most likely, he's just not going to get the opportunity anyway. So you can not be worried about it affecting your draft pick next year.
Mm-hmm.
You can give him a year to percolate.
Oh, I like that word. And good word.
If the team drafted him in the early second round, they're probably going to be committed to him for at least a year or two.
Right. They have some
like Washington is with Sam Howell.
Sure.
Sam Howell's a fifth round pick.
Right. Good point. No, it's a great point.
So the Hendon Hooker is a must draft. It's almost like I would. If I were in this situation, I would reverse engineer my entire rookie draft to make sure I get Hooker.
And if he gets late round one draft capital or round two draft capital, theoretically, he's going to a team that's going to have weapons. He's not going to the team, the 102, you know, the team that just sucked to have that draft pick. He's going to go to, let's just say, a Tampa Bay Buccaneers who have a Mike Evans and a Chris Godwin, and the system quarterback could go there, and that system could get a whole lot of fantasy points for your squad. So I definitely think the Hendon Hooker call is on point. One last question before I get you out of here, Matt. Do you have like a golden rule of thumb when taking over an orphan roster?
Well, before we get to that, let's also just discuss briefly what else you would do, right?
Okay.
So you're going to try to get two rookie quarterbacks from this draft and then another rookie quarterback next year who's even better.
Going back-back.
And
back-to-back,
that should solve your quarterback problem. You're going to go zero running back, but for real. Like when Sean Siegel wrote about zero running back, really – what he meant was, if you have a orphan that's been hollowed out and you're trying to do a 3-year rebuild, that's actually genuinely zero running back, like legit zero. Like you're going in with Ty Chandler and Jerome Ford. You're finding all these guys, all the Joshua Kellys, all the running backs that are on elite offenses that have all purpose skill sets, even baseline. Like Josh Kelly is mid-level workhorse across the board. Like we talk about carbon copy of a copy of a copy, right? That's Alexander Mattison. That's Joshua Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are going to give you just enough, but they can do it all. They can catch passes. They can block. They can do it all. They have just enough size, just enough speed, right? Just enough. So that's, you look at all the offenses around the league and who are these guys? Well, the Chargers, who's their guy? Right. You find, okay, Joshua Kelly. Oh, the Vikings. Yep. Who's the guy behind the guy? Oh, it's Ty Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the Browns, right? With Rich Rebar. Everyone, like I said, everyone's come to Jesus now on the Browns, and the entire AFC North is going to be a bonanza, a fantasy points bonanza. They're going to crank up the pass volume inevitably in Cleveland this year.
That's what they're looking for sure.
And that's just going to be more plays, more opportunities for Jerome Ford to break out.
Mm-hmm.
And then so all these guys could accrue value. And then none of these guys, let's say that something happens and Nick Chubb misses games, or Ty Chandler finds himself in a fantasy rich environment, Khalil Herbert, you know, these kinds of guys, you're insta flipping them. They're never going to, they're not going to be in your 2025 roster.
No, think of course. Through. Right.
They're not going to be. Ball, yeah. So you're only drafting running backs to essentially have a starting lineup. You're required to have a starting lineup, and then a bunch of running backs on your bench that are strictly lottery tickets for flipping purposes.
Yep. Second they pop, move them. Boom. Move them.
The second they pop, move them. I mean, can you think of another running back like that?
I'm thinking of James Robinson, Devin Singletary. They come to mind for me.
Devin Singletary.
Yeah. In Houston, he's been
guy. I know that... he's in Houston, but I mean, his upside is so minimal.
No, his upside's, I don't know. He's been a pretty good.
I don't know.
Around 10
even if he does get
game.
An opportunity, I so don't know. But that's what I'm saying. Like, that's anyone's the type of guy excited about him. And I don't even know. He wouldn't be the main guy the following year anyway. He and Jerick McKinnon are a little more like their value is all about getting touches this year. I'm thinking more about a guy like Keontae Ingram.
So you're thinking
Pierre
more longer
Strong,
term, more
Kevin Harris.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris I'm thinking Evans in the moment even. This year, you could flip Devin Singletary to a contender right away.
Yeah, boom. I think that's true. Boom. If you're thinking that way, that's true.
Yeah, I'm thinking this year, but no,
I like
your idea because
the flexibility of flipping him the following year.
I like that. That's a good
you know, the nice thing about like a Kevin Harris I know you said James Robinson, Pierre Strong. The nice thing is those guys will likely have value heading into next offseason some trade value. Jerome Ford for sure.
Love that call. Yep.
You know, Jerome Ford would be like, maybe he even can work his way into a shared backfield situation with Nick Chubb. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like he is a slasher. Like we've seen the sort of workhorse paired with a slasher, touch distribution, ideally the best running game, the most efficient running game in the league 7 years ago was in Atlanta. Remember
the Kyle Shanahan OG offense. You could say
that's right. That, well, they had great offensive line blocking. It was perfect. Right. And they gave 60-40 Freeman Coleman,
right?
Where you have a prototypical slasher and you have a player who can do it all, but you know, at a basic level, right. He's got the all-purpose skill set, not necessarily an exceptional talent, but does have an all-purpose skill set. And in the right offense at the right time, that guy could actually be the RB1 in fantasy, which Devontae Freeman was that year. It was a down year for running backs. Like, and then we had the running back renaissance started the next year, actually, after that. So we'll never see that again. Devontae Freeman, well, we might, you know, who knows? There's going to be a fallow period again at running back. But for now, we're in the midst of a running back renaissance talent at the top. So we're not going to see that again. But that's the structure that you can hope for, where Jerome Ford is in that Tevin Coleman role and he does capture the imagination of fantasy gamers. That's very possible. Right. So those are the type of guys. Ty Chandler, very similar.
Zamir White.
That's a great one. That's a great one. All these guys, they find them. They Chuba Hubbard.
Yeah.
They
because those guys will get you a better return theoretically also, right?
Elijah Mitchell.
Yeah.
These guys, Jaylen Warren, they stumble into opportunity and then you flip them. So you're going to have all those guys. I would say that the baseline guy that I would want would be anyone from Michael Carter on down.
So just outside the top 50.
Yeah. Anyone outside the top 50. That's probably who I'm going to try to stockpile in this rebuilding roster and just try to hit, Right. Play the probabilities. One of these guys is probably going to find themselves in an incredible situation.
Right.
At some point during the season. And this insta flip.
Boom, 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 boom.
Then at wide receiver, I mean, most orphans you take over have something. They have something to hold on to.
Yeah.
They usually have a couple assets. And typically they're wide receivers that have been good, not great. So there's probably going to be a T. Higgins on the roster.
Drake London.
Or a DJ Moore. You know, you want to hold on to those guys. So you probably want to hold on to all these wide receivers. It's possible, though, that if you have a wide receiver that's in a very fluctuating situation and he isn't necessarily put together more than a partial season, like where there's some fragility there, like a Christian Watson, I'd be more likely to trade those guys. I would be happy to trade those guys for picks, knowing that, yeah, that he had a great run, and especially if it was based around touchdowns.
Of course, right.
Mm-hmm. I would like to move that guy, right? I would like to move that guy somehow and maybe get up to a DK Metcalf, maybe get up to a Chris Olave. If you could somehow figure out a way to move a Christian Watson and even someone that's a little more of a projection and try to get up to get, because you don't care about depth, right? You don't care about wide receiver depth. Yeah. So target a team that's competitive, find the team that's trying to be competitive that may be lacking wide receiver depth. See if you can get up to an Olave.
Get in the top 10.
Yeah. See if you can get up into the top 10, or see if you can get a draft pick you think is going to be Jackson Smith and Jigba.
Right. Okay.
Who's essentially like an Olave. Because you're going to try to be competitive in 2025. Well, that means you could also trade for a CeeDee Lamb.
Oh yeah. He's still young enough.
If that's possible, you would try to do that. So that would be a move. That would be a move. Try to shed some of these speculative assets. Cause the last thing you'd want to do is actually go out and try to acquire these assets. So if you're going to be investing 3 years, that's three buy-ins,
right?
Think about it this way, three buy-ins. You don't want too many lottery tickets. The lottery tickets you want, if you're going to be investing three buy-ins, are going to have to be very cheap, those running backs.
Right.
And you'd want to divest yourself of more speculative wide receivers, try to lock in guys that we know are more stable, yet are still going to be giving you peak production in the window
in
2025. Yes. Yep. So even if you think about DJ Moore, this is his age 26 season, age 27, age 28. So you're going to get his age 28, age 29, age 30 season, 2025, 2026, 2027. That's the guy you can actually trade for.
Yes. That's like kind of the Stephon Diggs trajectory. When he went to the Bills when he was 27, he's going to be 20. He's going to be 29 this year. So there is definitely some meat on that bone. I like that call.
I think if I was in a massive rebuild, almost a hopeless rebuild, try to consolidate more speculative wide receivers to get a DJ Moore is the way to go, because you have to think about it in terms of the investment. I'm investing three buy-ins just to be competitive for one championship.
Right.
So I would not want to be relying on a Pickens or a Christian Watson, even a Jerry Jeudy, Treylon Burks. Very speculative, probably out on those guys. And then whatever tight ends I have that have value, I'm dumping those. I'm not trying to do the long game on tight ends unless they're super inexpensive.
Right.
This might be a year where you go spend 2 third round picks on tight ends and you start from complete scratch on tight ends.
This is absolutely the year to do that for sure.
Yeah. So you maybe go Musgrave and Laporta or something.
Right. Cunts or
something like that.
Yes.
Right. So that would probably be the move. I would hold on to a Chigga Kwankwu.
Yep.
I would hold on to a Trey McBride. You know, anyone outside the top 12, I could still hold on to. That's super young. But Njoku, no, think about him. He's going to be 27.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be close to 30. Dawson Knox, he's pretty like situation dependent.
100% agree with
that. You know, Schultz is just, you know, he's basically where he is in the dynasty rankings because of his 2023 target share.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason he's there. Gerald Everett, no way. You know, maybe a guy like Noah Fant.
Still pretty young.
Maybe a guy like Noah Fant, 25, stranger things have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Then a guy with that profile finally putting it together at age 25. That might be an interesting dart throw for a complete teardown, hopeless rebuild.
Right. They get another quarterback, like Hendon Hooker in the second.
Albert Okwuegbunam is perfect.
Oh, Albert Okwuegbunam,
because he's going to end up breaking out on another team.
Right. He's young enough. Right. He's got the profile.
Think about all these players. You know that Martellus Bennett didn't break out on his original team, right? You know Olsen didn't break out on his original team, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Right. The Carolina Panthers didn't draft Greg Olsen.
No, they did not. The Bears did, right?
And that's right. And you know, the Giants didn't draft Martellus Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the Cowboys.
Right.
Martellus Bennett was trapped behind Jason Witten.
Yeah. He was their blocker when they drafted him.
That's right. So a lot of these guys at tight end, they don't really break out to their second team.
Mm-hmm.
So Akuigbonam is the absolute poster child for what we're talking about. Absolute.
You want to fit the, you want to make sure that you're designing your roster so that the, all the cylinders are firing in your winning window. So if you've picked the 25, we've talked about how to get your quarterbacks ready for 25, what to do at running back at 25, receiver, tight ends, that last touch where if you can get those guys going as well in that window, we don't know what's going to happen in 2025. Tight ends are so volatile. You have a guy like Trey McBride who kind of marinates, like percolate, I think the word you used.
Yeah, you know who my tight ends would be? After a bunch of trades, I'd be rolling with two tight ends, Akuigbonam and Dan Bellinger.
Okay.
That's what would happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how many cautionary tales have we seen with a guy like Darren Waller, who suddenly starts picking up a bunch of injuries,
mm-hmm.
he flashes top three seasons, and the next thing you know, he's 31, and he's out of the league.
Right.
This could absolutely happen, especially given his super volatile, chaotic early seasons of his career. He puts it together for a brief period, and then his career derails for whatever reason. There's mm-hmm. a bunch of reasons these careers can derail. If you close your eyes and think about the Darren Waller career arc and other receivers and tight ends we've seen back through time, we could be looking at Dan Bellinger as the starting tight end for the Giants next year. And absolutely. A lot of people are really excited about it.
And he's
because
good
he flashed this year, like in his second year in the league, he's got a great athletic profile. Waller misses games. Bellinger flashes. Somehow, some way, the Giants move on from Waller after a year. Next thing you know, Bellinger's the starter next year.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or we talked about Albert Akuigbonam gets traded, has an amazing breakout, like melts faces in the month of December.
Right. On a new team with possibly a better fit.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, it's like it's just the lack of imagination when you hear people analyze player possibilities amuses me, right?
Yeah.
Like, why would you be bullish on this guy? He's not going to get any touches. Why would you? Why do you like this guy? He's a ghost.
It's a pretty good Dr. Evil you're doing right now.
Right. Why would you like this guy? Right. I mean, it's like, why not like this guy? You really think NFL teams always make the right roster decisions?
Right. I mean, we saw that in Denver. We talk about Albert O. The second Hackett was hightailed, the interim head coach the first week of practice was like, this Albert O guy is pretty good at football. You know that?
I mean, what? We see this in all sports.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. We it comes out later. Oh, with the U.S. men's national soccer team. Oh, the coach was feuding with Gio Reyna,
mm-hmm.
and like his parents were involved, and it was a total mess.
Yeah,
and that's why he wasn't starting. Like, okay, yeah, that's what these coaches do. They're these all-powerful egomaniacs, and they make some crazy fucking decisions.
Yes,
and they do some egomaniacal things.
They have their own,
and it's not always the player's fault that they don't get the opportunity they deserve.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. So, Matt, are you ready to tell everyone your golden rule for taking over an orphan roster? And then we'll send everyone on their merry way on this beautiful Sunday afternoon here in New England.
The golden rule for taking over an orphan roster is know when you want to be competitive and set yourself up to allow great players to emerge on whatever schedule they're going to be on. Right. That really, and that's a wacky, hacky golden rule, but you want to accumulate as much young asymmetrical upside as possible, while at the same time, asymmetrical upside at value as possible. Mm-hmm. Right. While at the same time, respecting the fact that you have three buy-ins coming up and that you really don't have the luxury of expensive speculative assets.
Right. Okay. Love it.
And the beauty is if you just load up on cheap, young speculative assets, your team's probably going to be real bad.
Yep. Pretty bad. I agree with that.
But it's fun. It's fun to look at a team like that and be like, God, man, if things break right, holy cow.
You don't want to be a team that needs a lot of things to break right. That's going to be the episode. Matt, thank you so much for joining. Go ahead and plug anything you got coming out on the horizon.
What do we not have coming up? You know what we have coming up?
Oh, tell it to them.
The NFL draft shows. We're gonna be live in Kansas City.
Kansas City.
Yes.
This barbecue sauce is made in New York City.
You don't remember that, do you?
No, but if you would have kept it on the wraps,
let us know
yours.
In the chat. Let us know in the chat if you remember the Casey Masterpiece barbecue sauce commercials from probably 20, 30 years ago. Like they would pull out like the number one barbecue sauce in the grocery store, right? And this guy was like, "Oh, Kansas City Masterpiece barbecue sauce is the best barbecue sauce." Right.
Yeah.
And then it's much better than this barbecue sauce. And he's like, "Oh, I like this barbecue sauce." And the guy grabs the bottle, he goes, "This is made in New York City." New York City. And then I'm like, "Wait a second. Wait, what? Nobody makes barbecue sauce in New York City. You know how expensive it is to make anything in New York City? Like the only things they make in New York City is like ad copy and like financial assets.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Like mortgage-backed securities and Vogue.
Everything that The Big Short was about, the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Mortgage-backed. Yeah. I think the only thing they make in New York City is like mortgage-backed securities and advertising magazine copy.
Yep.
Like that's what's actually made. If you actually want something that's actually made in New York, there's a handful of things. And then of course there's a few cool things like Nathan's Famous hot dogs.
Yeah.
You know, they have some random great stuff. Haagen-Dazs, maybe. I don't know.
New York?
I think so, actually.
Okay, we'll look
at that.
So
I think there's a few things, right? There's a few cool things. And then you have the in terms of their industries, right?
Yeah.
Banking and advertising. Sure. There's no way. Like, I don't believe it. Like, I don't even believe that commercial doesn't even like ring true that the barbecue sauce would be made. Where in New York are they making barbecue sauce? Really? Hey, show me the factory.
Yeah.
New York.
You haven't been to the big barbecue sauce factory in Manhattan?
I know this. Yes. That's the thing, right? You're like, "Oh yeah. So right out of Grand Central, you take a left, you go past the barbecue sauce factory." What?
Yeah.
What?
If you hit the honey mustard factory, you've gone too far.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So there's the Waldorf, and then next to the Waldorf, you got to go past the barbecue sauce factory. Like,
no.
I heard that the residents, you know where the sriracha is made in California? There's a factory where they make sriracha, and a lot of the residents banded together and they filed an ordinance sort of dispute.
Yeah.
Because of the smell.
Oh, I can really?
Because there's something about how they make sriracha in the factory that the smell is really bad for whatever reason. It's just, how the process works, fermenting and whatever.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, we're going to Kansas City. We're going to be eating genuine, real deal Kansas City barbecue. Mm-hmm. We've got 5 media passes for the NFL draft. We're going to have guys like Anand Nanduri, myself, so many others. Mm-hmm. You're going.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be there. Live coverage every round, every minute. You know, Jack Kavanaugh is going to be there. He's going to have his Adam Schefter newsroom set up. So we're going to be able to throw it to people, you know, on the ground at the draft, breaking news with Jack. So we're gonna step it up. Like every year, the goal is to elevate the production value. So we will be there live on YouTube. Tune in, mark your calendars. It's gonna be great.
Oh, cannot wait for that. And I thanks again for joining the show. That's episode 31. Listeners, I will be back next week. So I'll see you later. Peace.